Well, hi, folks. It is 11:30, and we have a lot prepared. And I thought these sessions were an hour, so we planned 15. You're going to get an hour's worth of value of information in 45 minutes. So look at that, packing you full. So we're going to go ahead and get started here. For those of you who may have just come in, there is a link here. I'll go ahead and I think I know how to move into present. Oh, here we go. There is a link here you'll see at the bottom, link.mnsu.edu/ELI2014. That hopefully is not too hard to remember. And that is going to take you to this page. It's just a published Google Doc. It's got a link to the online presentation. You can follow along. We're also using a tool called Chime In Cloud. It's a free online audience response system. It has an open-ended question just waiting there for you, so you can either text in your response through a cell phone or through a smartphone or a laptop. There's an open-ended question. So if you have any questions as we go through, we'll take questions both from our online moderator, from Chime In, and then from any of you at the end, assuming we're not totally out of breath from running so fast, but we'll get started here. Oh, are we a family? Okay, yeah, we'll get you started here. Okay. There we go. Okay, so quickly, what are we going to do in the next 45 minutes? Do a quick round of introductions just so you know who we are. We won't get to meet you, but hopefully afterwards we can all have a chat. We'll do a little bit of defining terms because I think this whole space of learning analytics is sometimes poorly defined, and we sometimes use the phrases in different ways. We'll talk about the course that we are using as our pilot for this, our Math 98 remedial course, and talk about the goals and methods that we went through in this pilot. And then we'll talk about our tool, Math Class, that we are working on. And then we will talk about the outcomes, try to look at the numbers that we're trying to get from these analytics, at least the preliminary numbers, very preliminary numbers. And try to sort of begin to abstract some principles around this whole analytics conversation, what these implications for practice would be. Go ahead. So that incredibly good-looking gentleman who's upside down there is me. I'm Jude Higdon. I am the assistant CIO for Academic Technology Services. I'll buy a beer for anybody who can tell me the Sanskrit name of that yoga pose. Anyone? Time's up. Pincha Mayurasana, feather of the peacock pose. I'll be doing yoga classes in the back afterwards. My colleague Blake Grotewald, he's a graduate student at Minnesota State University, Mankato, and our lead software engineer for Math Class. He's been working with some more senior developers on this as well. Okay, go ahead. So, learning analytics, oh my God. Somebody on the plane said to a colleague of ours that learning analytics is at this stage of development is sort of like a barn full of crap. But he didn't say crap, he used a worse word. And he said, we're pretty sure there's a pony in there, but right now all we can see is the mess. And that's a little bit of where we are, I think. It's a new space. When we think about it as a big thing, from the 2013 Horizon Report, we talk about it as the whole field associated with deciphering trends and patterns from educational big data or huge sets of student-related data. And in this term, let's go ahead to the next slide here, Blake. It's got this big data, CRM, Amazon, we're going to mine all this data. We know who you are coming in and your high school records and this and that. And we're going to find these big trends, associate them, and do all this predictive stuff based on the tea that you like to drink and on this and on all of that stuff. You know, there's all of this big stuff. That's not what we're going to talk about, okay? What we're talking about is a slice of that I think of as smaller data, okay? Much more course specific, much more thinking about how this operationalizes down to what I think of as a slice of learning analytics that we call learner analytics. So, go ahead. Okay. So our working definition for this has been that we are going to use the individual data trail resulting from students' activities in a class to provide more meaningful feedback and individuated pathways to help motivate them toward what we believe will be more productive learning environment. So this isn't looking in this whole big student affairs, where are they coming from, where are they going to? But it's really saying, in a class, students are leaving a digital learning trail. How can we look at those data in slightly more meaningful ways than perhaps we've done in the past, than maybe a flattened out grade book, and use those data to change what we do instructionally to hopefully redound to some kind of benefits for learners? So just so if you're looking for that other conversation, the good Dr. Pastilli at the back of the room can help you out with that. I'm a man of simpler tastes and more modest ambitions, and that's where we're headed. All right, keep going. So I was going to have you turn and talk to each other and chat about this. I'm not going to do that because I'm afraid we won't get through everything. But one of the things I would encourage you to think about, and one of the things we tried to do as we started this, is not just to jump into this and say, okay, we're going to do analytics, what kind of data do we have, but to really write a narrative around, like, okay, what kind of data, you know, what do we think we can do here? Why would we believe this? Like, if this were to work, what would that story look like? And so we drove it through three basic questions. They might be the wrong questions, but they were some of the ones we asked, which is, you know, okay, what information will we need? When we get it, what do we plan to do with it? Like, again, not thinking about what data we have, but just what we would need to be able to do something interesting. And then what would we hope it would happen as a result of our actions in that process? And so we tried to define that narrative and then use that as a guiding sort of process. Let's keep going. Okay, so armed with a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty about how to do this, and a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we approached our Math 98 course. This is identified by our provost and vice president for student affairs as being a particularly robust target, because we have real problems with getting students through that. It's a gateway course. You know, it was an obvious target. Many of you are probably dealing with similar things. Math remediation is a common one in higher education. Some metadata on the class: greater than 600 average enrolled students in the course. It's taught by a single instructor, but he has multiple GAs who then do discussion sections for him. And generally, to pass the course, students need to achieve roughly 70 to 72%, depending on the semester and how he kind of curves it. And he does require them to actually show and sit for the final. So even if they get that benchmark without showing and sitting for the final, they cannot pass the course. A little bit of a benchmark around the assessments that we were looking at in the course. There are three in-class exams, each at 30%, one final at 20. God, I hope my numbers add up here. Do they? Yeah, they do. Okay, good. 22 homework tasks, and these are done in an online tool by Cengage called WebAssign, very common. And six quizzes, they drop the lowest one, and then in-class mastery checks from the lectures. He's doing it right now on note cards. We've talked about translating that into more of a digital context, doing it with something more like Chime-In, the tool that you might have seen here. So those are our sort of analytical data points. Let's keep going. So our thesis around this was that providing struggling students, based on those numbers from the analytical package we just talked about, with increased instances of personalized feedback, and I should add here, from a human source, okay? And if you look at a lot of the feedback theory literature, one of the variables that people actually really think about is source of feedback. It sort of has been known to interact differentially with attention to it, so people feel like they're just getting an automated email versus, you've all experienced this, versus coming from a human being. So instances of personalized feedback from a human source would result in greater degrees of help seeking among students who receive that feedback, and we hope would then redound to them learning more and passing the class at a higher rate. Okay, so that's what we're after. If you haven't read Kluger and Denise's piece on motivated action theory, and has a lot of really good thoughts about how to sort of think about feedback and the framework for feedback. And so it's one of many really good, but it's the one that we're kind of operating from here. Go ahead. Okay, so within there's some variables worth defining. When we talk about personalized feedback, what on earth do we mean by that? In our case, This means that the students are going to get alerts from a GA. So they're going to get an email from the GA saying, hey, we noticed that you struggled on this week's quiz, or you didn't do well on this exam, or you know, you haven't been to class and filled out your mastery check cards and you're struggling there. So that's how we operationalize that. When we talk about students looking for help seeking, we basically operationalize that into three specific things. Visits to our Center for Academic Success, which is a student tutoring center in our library. Visits to office hours with the professor, and visits to office hours with the GAs. Pass rates are pass rates. They either pass the class or they don't. And then knowledge gains, this one's a tough one. When we started talking about students actually, you know, passing the class is one thing, but how much are they actually learning along the way? If you start at 10%, you know, on the first exam, and you end up at 60, that bifurcated moment, maybe you haven't passed the class, but that's still a fairly, potentially a fairly significant knowledge gain. So we wanted to think about it in terms of also relative gains to see if the students who were actually seeking help were kind of gaining on maybe the students who were already performing well. Okay, keep going. Okay, so the three questions I told you to ask, I'm gonna answer them for you. Okay, so what information will we need? Well, we're gonna need individualized learner assessment data and as much of it as we could get. We were gonna need to know, what will we do with that data? Well, we are going to need to integrate it into some kind of a coherent data set for each student, and then we're gonna have to have some kind of way to kind of transform that into actionable stuff where we could provide that targeted personalized feedback to the learner and suggest sort of pathways for what they're gonna do. What do we hope would happen? We hoped that they would actually go and seek help. They would actually go to the instructor's office hours, they would go to the GA's office hours, or they would go to the CAS, and then ultimately the outcome point of that is that that would mean that they learn more and they pass the class. Okay. So, we decided to do this with a roll-our-own model, and I'll talk about why we decided to roll-our-own rather than use an off-the-shelf product or use one of the LMS products in a minute. We created what's called the Maverick Comprehensive Learning Analytics Support System. Believe it or not, I came up with that acronym in about 12 seconds. Blake can attest, he came to me and said, we need a name for this, and I was like, boom. It was really awesome. And it right now is designed into this system for these two systems that have meaningful data for this class. But it's designed with a sort of an intentionality to be a more abstract analytic system that could easily hook in to, frankly, almost anything. So it's a kind of a supra analytics system for learner analytics. It's not going to be a learning analytics, big data, but for this kind of thing. So again, we're using Cengage and our LMS, Desire to Learn. It sort of pulls the data in, it cleans it up, it normalizes it for the student, and then it shows some reporting out to the TAs and to the instructor and gives them recommendations. These students, for the pain thresholds that you've set for these types of assignments, these students are falling below. They probably need you to reach out to them. Keep going. Okay, so why didn't we go with an off-the-shelf product? Why not? First off, our experience, there were two reasons we didn't go with our LMS's tool. Desire to Learn is kind of just getting up and running with some analytics stuff. They've had elements of it built in the past. It's getting more robust. There were two reasons for that. One of them is, quite frankly, we are part of a statewide system called MNSCU, and the time horizon for them did not map to the time horizon expectations for our grant. We are just getting started with that, and we couldn't wait for them. And I can't turn stuff on in Desire to Learn. They have to. So that was a reality that I was facing. And I also had an intrepid provost who was keen on finding and having us experiment in this space and get moving forward. So I had to go around that. The other thing, quite frankly, is that at the present time, when we evaluated D2L, and I don't mean to knock D2L, it's a great tool in many ways, but they all have their limitations. What we found was that while they had integration with Cengage into D2L, it baked everything interesting out of the analytics. It flattened it out into a grade. So Cengage has really interesting vertical analytics within their tool. And D2L has really interesting vertical analytics within their tool. But increasingly, my faculty are all over the world, right? I mean, they're all over the place in terms of the tools they're using, and that the sort of data that we've got on student learning is increasingly pluralized. It's all over the place. So if what the LMS is doing is baking out all of that depth of data and just giving you a score, a raw score in the gradebook, that's not an interesting tool for where we want this to go. It probably, frankly, would have worked in the pilot the way we're doing it now, but where we want it to be able to go, it was going to have limitations. So then there are third-party tools, you know, things that you can buy into, like Course Signals, which is a great little tool. Again, we found with the Course Signals tool that if it was integrated deeply into the LMS, it had a lot of depth to it. But if you use it in the mode of flattened out, outside of the LMS, it flattens some of the data in a way that we aren't comfortable with. Now, I think a lot of those tools are kind of trying to sort this, and we are too. I'm not going to say, like, math class solves this. But we didn't want to start from the ground up in an environment that wasn't sort of designed to get there. So we were like, all right. There's also kind of a spiritual side to this for us. We believe in open source, and so we're going to release math class open source. And if somebody else can find it and have fun with it, you know, and make it better, great. You know, so that was part of our rationale. We didn't see anything in the space that filled this niche, so we rolled up our own. Keep going. So we'll show you math class here in a minute. Blake will take over and show you math class a little bit of what it can do. But really, how we structured this is that we sort of worked with the instructor to design a standardized script as a starting point. Okay, and we did that because we didn't want a well-intentioned but perhaps undereducated graduate students sending mean-spirited emails and having the opposite effect of, you know what I mean? We wanted some control parameters, so we sort of looked to the feedback literature on how we might craft this. But then what we encouraged them to do was to think, as you start to learn the students in your sections, as you get these relationships, consider tailoring this, you know? We're in 2 weeks ago, but you're not now, you know, and you'll notice things went for a nosedive, you know, like let's get back on track, come see me. So they had the opportunity to kind of customize what they sent, but we did start from a standardized elements there. The instructor set the benchmark levels for who would be considered sort of red, you know, in the really needing something, who would be yellow, maybe marginal, and who's in the green on a particular type of assignment. And yeah, I talked about customizing the script. Okay, I think we're in good shape. All right, so it's way more fun to see it than to hear about it, so I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Blake, and he's going to show you the tool.
All right, so I guess, you know, here's the tool. For the developers, super techies in the room, it was built with the Python programming language. Using Pandas Data Analytics and NumPy Scientific Library with a Flask web framework for the front end, kind of to be allow us to rapidly develop new features. So currently, Math Class would accept a zip file of Desire to Learn Excel files and Cengage's WebAssign's comma-separated value exports, and then it would parse through that zip file, find all the files, and then normalize all that data into our own its own database. And so this is kind of what it would look like. The TA or faculty would come on, be able to get alerts about students. They'd be able to come on here and drill down to students that were in that red, students that were in that were, you know, fine. And so, you know, if we wanted to look at an example, we could see random student number three here. You know, if we look at their quizzes, and we're going to take this from the point of they just finished test one, so they're a third of the way through the course. And, you know, for the first two quizzes, they seem like they're doing okay. Really wouldn't see an alert come from that. From the first seven homeworks, they would see an alert for homework six, and the graduate assistant could, you know, identify to the student, you know, you seem to have problems, but you haven't had problems in the past. you know, just try to keep up on your homework. As far as participation or their mastery cards, first seven, they've been showing up to class, they've been answering the mastery card correct. But then we come to test, and we see test one, they got 48 out of 100 points. And all of a sudden, that graduate assistant needs to find out what's happening. And we can see that since this student has been doing so well in earlier portions of the exam, maybe their problem isn't a content problem, but maybe something more psychological like text anxiety. And so with that personalized feedback, the graduate assistant would really be able to kind of make a connection and give the correct remediation that that student might need to see.
Is that the basics?
That's the basics of MAV class. There is a lot of currently built-in features that our pilot course wasn't able to take in, like down to the item analysis of did they get that question wrong, and then matching those items and activities with learning objectives and learning objectives to competencies.
Sure. So, and we'll get to this at the end, the rationale for some of the deeper analytics that we've baked into the system that we haven't actually used with this particular pilot yet is the idea that we can use this in a sort of a backward design instructional design methodology. So you can do item analysis now with the kind of things that Blake was just talking about. You have if you have a quiz question that everybody who got a 90% on the quiz got wrong, you might want to rethink that question, or at least take a gander at it. Or it could imply that, hey, maybe this is something you're teaching poorly. You know what I mean? Like, because the kids who are doing well in the class are still not understanding conceptually this. So it can sort of elucidate those kinds of challenges as well. All right, let's keep going. So you can get to this link, through the online presentation. My colleague, Dr. Vicky Tsai, is leading our analysis of this. I will tell you that I'm marginally over my head with the numbers, so I'm going to do my level best to represent here. But if the questions get too deep, I'm going to have to refer them to her, but we can have that dialogue. Just mention that you have some questions maybe online and chime in. And if I can't answer them, we'll get there. She's doing the analysis. Keep there. Spoiler alerts to what we think we're seeing, okay? And I always want to put the appropriate caveats. We do not really have statistical significance to imply a lot right now. So you should just know that, right? I mean, what we're doing is starting to see some trends that are encouraging us to examine further. And there are some gaps in our data that prevent us, just historical data collection trends that prevent us from making some of the types of claims that we might hope to see here. But we think we're seeing students responding to the alerts by engaging more help-seeking behaviors. We think we see evidence that part of what we were hoping to do is actually working. We also seem to see students who are getting alerts sort of gaining that on the students who aren't. Now, I'll talk about those numbers because they're interesting and complex, but we do seem to see that. So let's go to look at some of the numbers here, Blake. There is an unpleasant gap where we have no data from the Center for Academic Success for the previous five semesters, but we seem to have historical data, which boggles my mind. We don't have that. We are trying to sift through the data that they have collected during those to see. But one thing that you can see is if we just look at the average number of visits, pure averages, and for the center for this particular course, the students who came in seeking help in that course, we have moved from a high of 3, basically, for everything we have data for, to 3.5 average visits. So in sheer sort of raw numbers for the data we have, we've set a new high in terms of that average for the course. It's a type of a number. It tells us one thing that, hey, the students en masse seem to be going into the Center for Academic Success a little bit more than they were before. Let's keep going. So this is our pie chart of all of the students in the class and their alerts and help-seeking behaviors. So 4 2x2 matrix, received an alert, didn't receive alert, sought help, didn't seek help. Okay, that's the data you're seeing here. So you'll notice flashing red, students who got the alerts but didn't go to seek for help, at least from the Center for Academic Success, okay? So that's obviously a target for us for the future, right? This is a big, big challenge. We have 400 students who are not doing well, who are still not seeking help, at least from the Center for Academic Success, okay? So that's a potential target. However, 121 students did. And that's a pretty good number. I mean, that's a pretty, you know, we had 121 students who went in and looked for help, who got an alert. Only 12 students who didn't get an alert went in, 2% of the class. And then what you would sort of expect, the students not getting an alert, 13%. Now, you'll also notice the students getting alerts, if you add 400 to 120, we have a lot of students who are struggling in this class. So this is why my provost was like, go, you know, see what we can do here, because those numbers aren't good. And this is a gateway course. This is keeping people out of the rest and of achieving their major. So let's keep going. Okay, so if we do comparisons of those two groups that we just talked about in the 2x2 matrix, group one, the students who went to visit the CAS, and group two, the students who didn't, there is a statistically significant chance that the students who did go to seek help also got an alert. Now, again, this is just a type of a statistic, because what else is also happening with those students? They're failing. So we don't know which of those two potential variables. I have not disaggregated that, so I don't mean to imply any kind of causation here. But it is a statistically significant difference. The students who went to seek for help were much more likely to have gotten an alert than the students who didn't go to seek for help were to have gotten an alert. And that's kind of an interesting number. Keep going. All right. So this is sort of the problematic people. Students who did not go to seek for help, we've got over 500. The help-seeking students, we've got 93. And what you can see is the gap where they start from on the first exam is pretty far, right? And it starts to converge and starts to converge and starts to converge. Now, the trend line is the wrong way, right, obviously. So overall, we still have real challenges with this course. We've got to get those numbers up, and that's something I've got to work with, you know, think about longer term. But again, thinking about that knowledge gain and the relative piece of this, there is an interpretation of those numbers that says, okay, they're gaining. You know, they're getting closer to performance at parity with students who really were perform. You know what I mean? The amount of knowledge they're gaining could be closing in. So if you jump to the next slide, you know, this is a sort of another way of looking at the same thing. This is the mean on the final exam, and this is the mean on the original exam. And this is the knowledge gap demonstrated among the students who are getting this there. So maybe we're starting to see the students who are engaged in help seeking actually sort of closing in and getting closer to the other students. Okay, let's keep going. A quotation from the professor in the class. So this was probably the most remarkable. We can do numbers and numbers. Jeff Ford basically told me in a meeting once, he's like, oh, this has transformed this class. I mean, he's sold. He's like, this is totally different. I've been teaching this class for years. Students don't pass the exam. I say, if you didn't pass the exam, you need to get into the CAS. You need to get in to see me in office hours. We're still crunching the numbers on the same way we've done for the CAS for his office hours. We have those numbers. We haven't crunched them yet. Vicky's working on them now. But he's like, I have a line out the door. I have 7 students out the door. I have never had students in this 600-person class coming into office hours before. He's like, there is no doubt in my mind the change is math class. So in terms of help-seeking behaviors, we have that data point, perception of efficacy from the instructor that may be getting there. Okay, keep going. So outcomes, do students who get the alert go to seek for help? Well, looks like it, except that more of them still aren't seeking for help, so you know we've got some tooling to do on that to get there, but it seems like it may be encouraging some students to get in the pool to seek for help. Students seeking are the students who are seeking help learning more? If we look at it from that vantage point of, are they closing in on the students who had been performing better? Maybe. It looks like they're probably doing that. Did students pass the class? No, not yet. that is clearly not a success metric of this endeavor so far. Let's keep going. So I just want to make all of this if I haven't said it very clearly, we have to be very careful about interpreting these data. I just want to make it very clear. I'm not selling anything. We're trying to tell ourselves true stories about ourselves and figure out, does this have, you know, some value here? And so I just want to make sure that kind of caveat is very clear. Keep up. Okay. So let's take a leap of faith and assume that something interesting is happening here, okay, which is we'll explore more in the future. We're going to publish on these results or try to publish on these results, and you'll be able to sort of see. But we think maybe there's something there. What are the implications for practice? What does this mean? One, data are messy. Okay, this whole thing with data analytics and all of this, the data are in different types of places. It's hard to work with them. It's hard to normalize them. And this is one class. I have faculty using tools from 17 different publishers and, you know, different clicker devices and all of those data. And so if you buy the premise that it's important to sort of accept those data sources on their own terms and integrate them in an interesting way that we started with, it's going to take some work. It's contextual, and we're going to have to figure it out. Math class is designed with that in mind, but we don't have that nut entirely cracked yet. So get started if you want to get started, because it's hard. It's hard to do. Keep going. Meaningful learner analytics requires early meaningful assessment. If you are teaching a course and you care about this and want to think about this, there is a very, very clear instructional design mandate. You have to get meaningful feedback and meaningful assessment happening early. You've got to start collecting data on students early. If you're waiting till week 6, you're hosed. You can't do this. So that is a very practical reality. And I think, you know, Stone Weisky at Harvard calls it ongoing assessment. What is the exact phrase that they use in their Teaching for Understanding book? But the idea of sort of meaningful ongoing assessment has been in instructional design for a long time. But this, like, is a clear reason why you have to do that if you're going to go this direction. Let's keep going. Okay. We believe, but can't yet fully confirm, that personalized feedback from a human source has positive motivational interactions with students' help-seeking behaviors. So if you buy that something we want to come out of this process is students trying to, you know, seek for help themselves, this could be something that you would want to do. Keep going. We sort of have this pseudo-fudged belief that the alert systems may activate some students' help-seeking behavior. There's a lot of students who are not being activated by that. And so if we do think that outcome is, we've got some tinkering to do with the instructional design. A highly structured, highly knowable, highly curated course has many structural advantages over a less structured course in terms of analytics. This is a kind of a political statement to make. What do I mean by that? You know, if you can curate a curriculum and a course down to the learning objectives and down to the assignment and down to the item within the assignment, you can do a hell of a lot. The problem with that is it makes your entire instructional design utterly crystalline, because if you change one little item, you've got to recurate the entire thing and remap it back to the system. And that's the piece that balance of what becomes a meaningful item for an analytics thing is something you're going to have to think about. Our instructor basically said, I'm not going further than a week. A week is the unit measure, and the individual assignments within a week is how deep into the curriculum I'm willing to go. You can go deeper and do interesting things from there, but he's not there. The tool can do it. That's a question. Keep going. We may need to reconsider our obsession with semesters. One thing that I'm thinking, credit hours and all of that, and people have been talking about this for a while, the Emporium model kind of instruction. One thing I'm going to be having some candid conversations with my provost and some other folks in our staff about is, look, if these folks are going from 10% demonstration to 60, but then we arbitrarily cut the semester off at week 16, and they're gaining, and they're working hard, and they're trying, and they're at 60, maybe three more weeks gets them to 70, you know? So what does that look like for us? You know what I mean? We're obsessed with this model of, you know, so where do we go with that information? And we have actually found that just the fact of trying this has helped us engage in some really interesting dialogues about how we think about data at our institution. The CAS, for example, with that huge gap, they sort of were collecting all these data, and I think they just were like, nobody's using this. And they were like, nobody's ever going to use this. We're not even using it. They just sort of gave up, and it's not. So we've been able to have a sort of a dialogue with them to talk about, well, okay, how could you structure these data? What would you find useful in a tool like Math Class to give you information about how your activities are working? So we've been able to sort of start to talk about how we think of our institution as a data by the fact of this process. Keep going. Okay, and then again, highly encourage you to know what data story you want to tell. What's the classic Einstein quotation? Not everything that's measurable is worth knowing, and not everything that's knowable is worth measuring. You know, but certainly you should know what, before you start just collecting data up and trying to find things, you know, what do you think is going to happen? You know, we've told our story, we've tried to tell it, you can tell me how well we did, that, you know, we give students this feedback and they take these types of responses. What do you want to happen? Keep going. All right, so what are our next steps here? Well, first, we're actually considering, we're going through an IRB process and figuring out where we want to take this so we get more data with some more chops on it. We may do a full experimental design, and we're toying with that, or a quasi-experimental design to assign students into treatment groups and kind of see what we see at that point. Some of the instructional design implications we're talking with, you know, do we want to go down this road of competency-based instruction and get to that point? We don't have an answer to that question yet. But maybe extending the semester the Emporium style that I talked about before. One thing that I'm very interested in, this goes back to my dissertation research, is the feedback variables. You know, right now, that's fairly monolithic. We give them a script that we have tried to align to sort of broad feedback theory, you know, that we think. But what happens if we tweak the message around goal orientation? So if you're not familiar with goal orientation, there's mastery and broadly speaking, there's mastery and performance goal orientation. Do we tell students in that feedback, you failed? That's performance orientation. Do we tell them, you seem to be struggling understanding the concepts in this course? And do we see a differential reaction to those kinds of things if we frame that feedback in different ways? Efficacy feedback, you know, if we include a message that says something like, kind of like the Al Bandura social cognitivist kind of, people who have been at this before have succeeded, you know what I mean, if they take these steps, you know, is that kind of feedback that we'd want to give to kind of build up that sense of efficacy. So some of those different tweaks and variables we're kind of interested in playing with a little bit. We mentioned the item analysis and backward design. What does all this data we're starting to get through Math Class tell us about the instructional design and even the item design of items in our tests and quizzes and things like that, and how can we improve those pieces? Does it elucidate clear problems in instruction? Nobody gets this concept, you're doing it wrong. You know, go back and redesign that. We've got to do better. Keep going. Blake can talk a little bit more about this. You know, we're going to do some, we're continuing development on Math Class itself. We want to think about ways to do easier integration of new data sources, making that flexible. We want to do a lot more deep diving into the data. So as Vicky, my numbers gal, starts finding the types of reporting that are interesting, she'll feed those back to Blake, and he can bake in some of that stuff right into to run in a more standardized kind of way. And then we hopefully, you know, if people have an interest, we will, or even if they don't, we'll probably release it as open source sometime in the next year. We're going to have to clean it all up a little bit before it's really ready for that. But you know, if people find it useful, why not? So thus concludes our prepared remarks, I think, right? This is our contact information. And then I just have to do this one more slide there, Blake. We are but two of an army of vastly superior intellectuals, really talented people working hard on this, including Dr. Pastilli at the back of the room, who's really helped us guiding this from Purdue University, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We really want to thank them for taking a chance on an unknown group of analytics folks. So I appreciate your time, and we can take some questions. You jumped right up.
Yeah. Questions?
Okay. Questions, go.
My name is Shauna Coles. I'm from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and I think probably a similar type of university.
Sure.
I have lots of questions that I know we're short on time. Do you have schedule for the zip file? You have like a regular schedule that you're doing?
Yeah.
Like weekly or?
It's weekly. Yep.
Yeah, it's Monday mornings. A script runs off to collect all the exports, and then that gets sent into our system.
What about, and you sort of alluded to this with your feedback, what kind of training are you giving those graduate students? I think this is a key to make or break what you're doing, but I'm curious as to what kind of feedback, and you mentioned that, some of their, it could be test anxiety, and I just am, I work mostly with non-traditional students, but I was like, you've just opened a big can of worms, and I'm just kind of curious as to your training and kind of what you're giving them as...
We've opened a big can of worms in because they could be giving them bad input and feedback.
Bad feedback, and to suggest that you may have test anxiety, it could be a million different things.
Exactly. It really could. And I think your point is incredibly well taken, right? So I think what you're really getting at there is, if we're trying to use data in this way, it's like, what's going on below that? I mean, We don't exactly know, although there is a robust literature on this, and so that's where I come in as a psychologist in the room to try to bring to bear some of the theoretical, underpinnings of what we think could be interacting and at play there, or at least, that. So we probably have not done as much as we should have. What we have done is we have brought the TAs together at the beginning of the semester with the instructor, and we've talked about sort of how we've constructed the feedback and like give them some suggestions for how they would use the tool and also some things to avoid, right? So, avoid using punitive language, we do talk about diagnosing, so we're like, avoid diagnosing, but if you think things might be there, it's something you could potentially explore with the student if they do come in to say. So we have talked about that. We probably need to do better. That's, I think, good feedback for us. Yeah.
One last question.
Sure.
You mentioned this when you talked about maybe these implications for practice.
Sure.
You don't have to respond. I'm seeing red flags for staffing and people, asking for FTE to support the, not only your instructor, because now you've increased the number of people who are at his door that you've mentioned, but are not necessarily finding success in the course.
Yep.
And also from the student success perspective, if you're hoping that more students use the center for academic success, whatever you call it, I just see that that's a great thing as long as you have
the resources,
the results that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Just to finish up, do you ask the students who get the alert who don't go to seek help at the center if they sought help in any other ways?
So it's a great question. I think one of the depths that we can plumb here is, what's happening with that, two-thirds of the class getting alerts but not seeking help in any way that we've defined it yet, right? We have not yet finished our IRB, and so before we can do that, we have to finish that process. So this cake is baking, and we're going to be doing a lot of those kinds of things. Because that's one of the groups, the two big actionable things, I hope, implication-wise for the university, is that we think about this question of, look, these students are gaining, That to me feels critical. It's like, let's reward their effort and the gains they've made and find a way to get them over the finish line, If we think of it that way, which is how I think of it. But the other thing is, the numbers may look good, but, I still have two-thirds of my students failing this class and not seeking behavior in any way that I've defined seeking help yet. So then, do we need to redefine seeking help, or do we need to change what we're doing to get at that outcome? And that's the next turn of the design screw for us. But we know that now, which we didn't know at the beginning, so that's good. What other questions do you have for us? I think we're close to the end of our time. Is it the end? Or it's 12:15. So we didn't get to any of the chime-in questions. I don't even know if there are any. Any of the chime-in questions that are there, if I didn't get to your question, chime it in now. We will take all of those. We'll respond to them on that web page, just in a blog format. So and then easy to get in touch with us. We'd love to have a digital coffee or beer or something with you. So give us a jingle, and you can tell us how to make this better and how to think about it better, because we're new to it too. All right. Thank you all very much.